Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and this is the time of year when the major Supreme Court decisions start to come down as they move toward the end of their term. At the end of June, we're awaiting, for example, the firefighters' racial discrimination case from New Haven that Judge Sotomayor may get upheld or overturned on. That's going to be a big case, both for the issue involved and for the nomination involved. There was a ruling this morning from the Supreme Court, actually a refusal to hear a case that has impact on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law, not allowing openly gay and lesbian Americans to serve in the military. And what the Supreme Court did on that today is turn down a challenge to the policy based on constitutional grounds. So it will not hear this case. It was from former Army Captain James Pietrangelo, who was dismissed under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. And a federal appeals court in Boston had earlier thrown out the lawsuit by Pietrangelo and 11 other veterans. He was the only member of that group who asked the high court to rule that the Clinton era policy is unconstitutional. But the Supreme Court is letting it stand, letting the reversal stand. In other words, the Supreme Court says, well, this may be an interesting policy issue, don't ask, don't tell, but we're not going to hear a challenge to it on constitutional grounds. Now, they did issue a ruling today on a matter of judicial bias, and we're going to get a quick take on that from Dahlia Lithwick, who covers the Supreme Court from Slate.com. Hi, Dahlia.
Hi there, Brian.
So this is that elected judges must recuse themselves from cases when large campaign contributions from interested parties create the appearance of conflict of interest. Is that about it?
That's about it. I mean, the best thing I can say for your listeners, Brian, is that this was a Grisham novel. This literally was the plot of the John Grisham novel, The Appeal. And in effect, what happened was this is a coal mining company in West Virginia, the CEO of which spent close to $3 million of his own money to take out one Supreme Court justice on the Virginia Supreme Court. They're one of 39 states that elect their judges, and then spent close to $3 million of his own money to put someone else in office while his case was pending. So this was just this sort of hideously icky set of facts, and the court split 5-4 today, the four sort of typical liberals joining with Justice Anthony Kennedy, the moderate swing voter, who wrote the opinion, 5-4, saying the facts of this case, the appearance of bias, and the fact that this now Chief Justice of the West Virginia Supreme Court refused to take himself off the case, despite the fact that so much money had gone into his campaign by one of the parties. It was just too much for Kennedy to swallow and for the majority to swallow. And they said in this particular case, the appearance of bias was so extreme that he should have recused.
So even on a case like this about recusal in the face of massive contributions to a judge's campaign by an interested party in a case, even this divided court 5-4.
Well, this is a very, very tough issue for several reasons. One is there's this notion of federalism, that states have the right to set up their own systems, and I think that bothered the court. But I think there's this feeling that once you create laws that control when judges are biased, you have to live by them. And clearly the dissenters in this case were quite worried that this is going to come back and haunt the judiciary, and that they're going to be at the mercy of anybody who yells bias in any litigation. So it's an area of the law that has very, very little precedent. The statutes are quite vague. And I think that the dissenters just didn't want to wade into the business of determining when is the bias so extreme that judges must recuse. It does open something of a Pandora's box.
You know, this raises, and we don't have time to really get into it, but this raises the thicket around the issue that there's really no good way to select a judge. there's no good way, because if you have appointed judges, then you have patronage, And judges can be put into place on the basis of the politics of the governor or the mayor or the president or whoever it is. You know, and it's not like Supreme Court justices in most cases where the Senate actually gets to confirm the nomination of the president or turn it aside. A lot of places, just the mayor or governor will get to appoint judges and, you know, and that's it. And electing judges, even though we love elections, electing judges is a terrible way to select a judge because you get situations like this. The public never knows who judicial candidates are. They don't get their minds around them like they do around senators and legislators and stuff. And so then, you know, various interest groups get their favored judicial nominees into the system and one of them gets elected. There's no good way to elect a judge. Have you thought about that?
Well, I think everyone's thought about it. The one piece of it that I think is important to point out is that this wasn't an issue until the last, you know, couple of years where judicial elections became this high-stakes, high-finance game. In other words, I think the folks who believe in judicial elections would tell you the problem didn't really enter until millions and millions and millions of dollars started to be spent on judicial elections. Justice at Stake, an organization that tracks how campaign spending has really, really polluted state judicial elections, says that in the 39 states that elect their judges, they've now raised more than $168 million to finance these races since the year 2000. So this was not a problem 20 years ago. It's a problem now because you're looking at somebody who can, with a $3 million donation, put in a judge on the seat. So I think it's the corrupting influence of money in the elections that's probably the nut of the problem here.
So if people don't want to get bogged down reading the details of this case, they can instead read John Grisham's novel, The Appeal. And my producer called up the New York Times review of The Appeal, and it says, Grisham has a keen ear for the baloney of biased rhetoric, particularly when it comes from the right. The Houston Chronicle said, the problem, as with all Grisham's fiction, is that it's egregiously written, work that observes none of the conventions of traditional literary narrative. Characters arrive as if spawned from the head of Zeus, fully formed and unchanged by anything that transpires in the course of the story's unfolding. Meanwhile, pronouns that float through his prose with indeterminate antecedents and the plot clanks from point to point. So, I don't know. If you believe the Houston Chronicle, maybe you shouldn't read The Appeal. But the New York Times likes the keen ear for the baloney of biased rhetoric. I don't know if we can find all those qualities in the actual written opinion of the five justices of the Supreme Court, who today upheld the notion that elected judges must step aside from cases when large campaign contributions from interested parties create the appearance of conflict of interest. Dahlia Lithwick from Slate.com, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in just a minute, philosopher Alain de Botton on the question, if you have to love your work in order to love your life.